Good morning. It's 7:55 a.m. on the 25th of November, Pacific Coast time. North American continent. There's a lot of Pacific Coast. My apologies right up front. These wujos are becoming annoyingly frequent. I never intended to do this many of them, but this particular one has been urged on me by circumstances and a number of requests. Before I get into it, though, the business of the day. We have been in crisis mode with some complications from Kathy's health. I think we're able to see our way through the problems of the last week or two, and things will gradually return to, you know, whatever's going to be our new normal for a while. And in the meantime, you'll just have to bear with me on my absence in being able to get at emails. So my apologies to that. Now, I still read them as the opportunity presents itself, because I can flip Vortex on and plow right through them. But the ability to respond to them has been limited by the demands placed on me here at home. Anyway, though, I've gotten a shocking number of emails about this Coast to Coast show the other day, which is really what prompted me to do this particular Wujo, and I've got a couple of other subjects to quickly cover as well in it. But let's get to the Coast to Coast interview. It was with this fellow by the name of Drunvalo. Melchizedek, I think, is his last name. Drunvalo is an interesting name in and of itself. You rarely see it anymore. It is variously described as Romanized or Latinized German, Teutonic, or it's described as Germanized or Etruscanized Latin, or Old Latin. And Drun means the place in the center of your chest from which the noise of your heart emanates. And Valo is the root for valorous, so it means good heart, or, you know, heart of valor. So love the name, Drunvalo. It's quite nice. And, of course, it also sounds, to a certain extent, as it means, the Drun of your heart. Anyway, though, and just as an aside, this particular that particular word predates German even, and comes from an area of the Black Forest in the old Teuton, and maybe one of the older words in terms of the primacy of its relationships back to what is called Sumerian. So just as an aside. Anyway, so Drunvalo, he had an interview, which I've heard part of, with George Norrie on Coast to Coast. And it brought up the subject of the December 21 and the crustal shift. And apparently, I've actually lost some of the PDF files when we were kicked off of Earthlink. We also had a crash here, which was simultaneous, and we'd had some people besetting our servers. And so I lost a couple of files. I'll see if I can recover them. I think I've got them on a backup somewhere. It's quite tedious to go through all of these. But in any event, one of the files addresses the alternative hypothesis to the idea of a crustal shift. And this is what Drunvalo was bringing up. He was bringing up from his perspective what's supposed to go down on December 21 relative to how the Earth is now and how it'll be in the future. And he's speaking to the idea that we're going to have a magnetic crustal shift, or a magnetic pole shift, and this will induce a crustal shift. He doesn't call it that. They refer to it in different terms in the interview. But basically, he's talking about all of a sudden the magnetism will go away, and the mantle of the Earth will become liquid without the magnetism, and the crust will, that's all of us guys up here on the tectonic plates, will go walk about some great distance, and it'll cause all kinds of problems. Now, I also used to be, years ago, under the impression that this was a very valid theory, because all the evidence pointed to it. I started questioning the elements of the theory late 90s when I came across a number of other facts and started thinking about things differently. And some of the facts in the matter are that the evidence that is cited by Drunvalo goes all the way back to people like Charles Hapgood and others. His Path of the Poles was one of the seminal works about our weird magnetic tracery that's left on our planet, that apparently suggests that our crust goes walkabout periodically, and that periodicity There's no real word there, but that period is actually about 13,000 years, coincidentally, you know, half of the precessional cycle at all. Okay, well, and all of this evidence is valid. Charles Hapgood, all of the people that followed him, those few that preceded him along this line are all looking at valid evidence and they're making valid conclusions. The problem is, in my view, they're wrong. Now, they're wrong because their thinking, in my view, is not open to the idea of an expansion of the planet. If you view all of the planets as being a growing media, so to speak, and a being that will grow over time, it brings a new element into play that explains all of the evidence without there having to have ever been a crustal shift. And you can get into the details with me anytime you care to. Any detail that you can find that suggests that the crusts of the planets actually rotate and have ever rotated can be explained by the expansion of the planet as well. Further, there's a really cool thing that just convinces everybody, which is Neil Adams has done some remarkable videos that can be found on YouTube that show the planet expanding. And it's like, well, duh, this all fits. And third, there's this other element involved, okay? And here's where really the scientific fat hits the fire. In order for Drunvalo's hypothesis to be valid, and it's not his, I mean, he's basing it on other evidence and things that people have told him, they have to postulate a whole series of events that we do not see occurring around us. And there's this particular maxim in science that says, basically, if you don't see the shit happening now, it never ever happened. And I buy that because I understand that there was no Big Bang. That's just a wild-ass theory that explains part of the facts of reality and creation, and part of, not anywhere near, the totality. And it does so to the extent that it keeps some of the academic minds and some of the sheeple content with this idea that at one time there was nothing and all of a sudden there was something and it happened with a big damn bang. Well, we don't see any evidence of the Big Bang continuing. If it ever happened, it should be continuing now. And there's absolutely no evidence of it. All of the ideas of the redshift, how they postulate the expansion of the universe, all of this stuff is all hammered in to fit the Big Bang theory after the fact. So they're trying to make their observable evidence that they see around them fit their theory instead of throwing away their theory when all of the facts disagree with it. So in my world, my understanding of universe, we never had a Big Bang. We had an initial bloop as the first atom was created, and thereafter it's been going on ever since. And so it's not the Big Bang theory, it's the little bloop, 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 as all these atoms come into existence, some of which are in your body. So the idea that you were ever made of stardust is bullshit. Those atoms don't work that way. They have a lifespan of their own. They deteriorate. They don't hang around forever. They're not little rocks. They're intersections of energy vortices as you are. And so until you view the planet in an appropriate manner and the universe in an appropriate manner, you're likely to come to some erroneous conclusions. In my opinion, Drunvalo, in spite of his good heart and his well-placed name, has come to some erroneous conclusions, and these conclusions are that the crust of the Earth is able to shift. In order to support that theory, somebody at some point had to postulate all these wild-ass things, like all of a sudden all the rock going over the course of 14 days becoming molten due to no magnetics holding it together. And there's, you can argue, I could get into details and argue why that couldn't occur, and why, if it were ever going to occur, it should be occurring now, and we should be able to find evidence of it occurring. And you can dispute every single item that they bring up in terms of the people that are suggesting a crustal shift. And as long as you maintain the view that the Earth is in expansion mode, you have a rational argument that explains what's going to occur and what's happening under our feet. Now, further, about the idea of the rock going liquid and the planet shifting, we see no evidence of any of the academic view of tectonic plate theory or any of this on our planet around us. There's no evidence that the tectonic plates go shift about by a few millimeters every year away from each other on a sphere that does not increase. There is evidence that the continental masses shift away from each other from the center of the planet because the planet grows little incremental movements all the time. The little bloop, 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 bloop is still ongoing inside all of universe and including the inside of our planet, which makes our planet get bigger. And this is actually what's going on, and this is accounts for both the rapid ruptures as well as the small incremental measurements that they see between the tectonic plates that they are assuming is on a stable sphere whose circumference and diameter does not change. As soon as you allow into your thinking the idea that the circumference and the diameter of the Earth does change, it grows over time, then you can have a different view of things, and none of it postulates or suggests at all a crustal walkabout. So, no, I do not think that Drunvalo is correct, and no, I don't think on December 21 there's going to be any kind of a 14-day period that's going to lead to a crustal walkabout, nor do I think that the Mayan evidence that was written down in the long count or on any of the stelae in any way relate to any of the idea of a crustal walkabout, although I do think that they are indeed talking about all the other kinds of crap that's going on at the moment. And a lot of the stuff that they are talking about relates to how Morris Cottrell suggests that the symbols be translated. And being in the symbol business, I've looked at a lot of these, and I agree with a number of his conclusions. There are many I don't agree with, such that as finding the Merkaba there indicating that that Judaism was rampant in pre-Mesoamerica. In fact, the Merkaba is a symbol that was adopted by the Rothschilds and the Kabbalists late in the last millennia, and so the Maya's use of it predates it, as does the Hindus at all. It'd be like saying, okay, because we find the Merkaba symbol, the intertwined tetrahedrons, in some Sanskrit literature that we see dating back, at least in terms of its own internal references to eclipses and stuff and alignments, it appears to be dating back 23,000 years. And so are we to presume that Judaism existed 23,000 years ago just because of that symbol? No. That's a misidentification of the symbol and the cause and the effect. So again, we have that, I think, in the case of Drunvalo's understanding of what's going to occur. We are indeed in a period of crisis for the planet insofar as us scurrying little critters across the surface of it. This relates to the problems that the Earth itself is undergoing in its own expansion and as the solar system changes. The relationship of the planets to the sun is much more complex than anybody would think. We have evidence of this continuously now in how the moon is no longer the way it was even 2 years ago in terms of its lunation. The lunation has changed. This can be tracked because the lunation is extremely complex. Most people are not able to do this, but it is ongoing. Those people that are telling you, hey, look, the moon is in a weird position and so on, they're quite correct. The moon's orbit has not changed because the moon spirals around behind us the same way we spiral around behind the sun. And in that sense, its spiral relative to our spiral has indeed changed. And these are all relative to the conical section that we occupy in the coma that is behind our sun as it transits through the solar system, or through the universe. So my supposition is that indeed there may well be magnetic poles go walkabout. We see evidence of this all the time, and this is a natural phenomenon. In the year 2000, at one point, the sun had a number of south poles, and then it had no south poles and a bunch of north poles. And then finally it decided, okay, I'm going to have a north pole and a south pole, and I'm going to put them right here. And it got done with all that business in a relatively short period. I think it totally encompassed like 13 or 14 months. So it's not unexpected that we might have the same kind of thing occur here on Earth. And as a matter of fact, our magnetic field is ever anything but stable. And this is to be expected. So let's look at that for a second. A lot of suppositions are based on the idea, a lot of the projections and that also are used as evidence for the crustal displacement theory at all. A lot of these projections and forecasts are based on the idea that Earth should have a magnetic field that is stable. I don't see anything in universe that suggests that that is the case. There's no evidence that stability is the nature of universe, and in fact, any time I find something that is stable, usually it's dead. So let us presume the opposite and see where the thinking leads, and it opens up an entirely new view of what is likely to occur and what should be occurring around us and how we should react to it. And a lot of the fears that were generated by the discussion on Coast to Coast would go away if we examine the idea that Earth is never, ever, ever supposed to have a stable magnetic field that persists at a particular Gauss rate, which is a measurement of magnetic intensity, over a long period of time. Rather, I find it it would be exceptional should that ever occur, and rather be I think it would be a little bit scary. The opposite is really the case. As any kind of a living being, the planet should have a magnetic field that just goes fluctuating all the time based on all the shit that's going on all around us in the universe, just as it does with the humans. So here's kind of a little dig at Drunvalo, a nice one. I mean, I'm not being too nasty. I find it interesting that he is able to perceive the continual variance in the magnetic fields of the humans around him, yet does not expand his thinking to apply that idea to the magnetic field of the planet upon which he walks. You know, there's no reason that anything should be stable in this universe, since we've never seen stability. In fact, it's kind of stupid of us to even postulate it. So, a long way of saying, no, I don't think we're going to go walkabout, but I think, yes, there's all kinds of weird-ass magnetic effects that are going on, and instability is the nature of the planet. It's the nature of the way. And so, really, this is, you know, this is what martial arts and discipline is all about. In the sea around you, you need a stability internally or your under your feet that allows you to navigate. So as it will put it into sailor terms here. So I need a rock solid boat, so to speak. But I don't want my boat to be a rock. I want it to be flexible and float with the water and, react to the circumstances in which, the universe will throw at us. And so, our point of stability has to be basically internal, since we're talking about, metaphorically, us navigating the seas of universe. Our boats are our bodies, and our thoughts, etc. And in that sense, the stability that we would gain can't be achieved by a rigid shell, because that's antithetical to the way that universe works. And so we'll never see anything that's antithetical to the way that universe works pop up. If it does pop up, well, it's part of the way universe works and is antithetical. So it's one of those weird little debating points that drives you crazy. But there is a factual component to that. The nature of the universe supports continual instability. We need to recognize this and get our minds wrapped around it, because that allows us then to say, okay, if I'm going to be buffeted continuously by instability both within my own body and within the bodies of the people around me and within the body of the planet and within all the magnetic fields of the solar system in which I exist, where can I go for a core or a center or a point upon which to base my navigational abilities within this media? And many of us choose to go to a discipline, yoga, meditation, tai chi, you know, any of the martial arts. Any of these things, and painting, music, cooking, hairdressing, I mean, anything pursued with the intent of mastery that becomes a center upon which you can base your navigation is an effective core for you. It need not be... what I'm saying is the esoteric, meaning the internal perception of universe and projection of ourselves upon universe, can be achieved through any vehicle. It could be as bizarre as, you know, the magnificent sand sculptures, you know, that the Buddhists put all the labor into and then destroy when it's done. Because they understand the nature of instability. It can be, as I say, hairdressing, because, you know, it's there and it's gone, or nail painting, or even tattooing, because tattooing alters and you understand the nature of the growth of the body and so on. All of these things point to the ability to navigate through the instability that is around us. And if we remove from our perception and our goals the idea that stability should be there, then first off, it eliminates all kinds of anxiety. It's like, ah, screw it, you know. Shit happens, and it's bound to happen, and we just need to be able to figure out how to deal with it, rather than attempt to, say, try and fend it off because we think there should be some other natural state of existence. Make sense? So in that sense, go and look at all of Drunvalo's arguments and his evidence. And I would invite him to do the same, postulate a different view of reality in which instability is the norm and not the the exception, and that therefore instability just simply is a matter of degree and change is an inherent nature of it all. And you can start postulating all, and you get actually a little bit more settled about it all, because, yeah, we're going to have a magnetic pole shift because the magnetism flips all the time. But there's never been any real evidence of crustal shift. And there's no real worry about that. Yeah, there's a reason to fear the earthquakes because we'd get big ones because there's all kinds of evidence that the earth rips itself apart periodically, creates new separate land masses in jerks and fits, as well as doing little separation growth in the little bloop, bloop, bloop approach as it gets new matter internally. The two are not mutually incompatible because we see both violent eruptions on the sun and steady growth. We see this all around us continuously. It is just a nature of the universe that there is an expression of this level of duality. I imagine it's going to be very catastrophic, but the idea that we're going to have any kind of a crustal shift in terms of the planet going walkabout and having a new axis is rather difficult to fit into my point of view. Further, there's other evidence that suggests that everything in universe tilts at a specific angle relative to the little bloop approach of where it popped in. So the idea that our Earth is tilted over at a certain angle relative to the orbit and all the other planets are, and that that angle should change, I also find that difficult to comprehend. Now, in Drunvalo's evidence and in his discussion, they were discussing about the tremendous amount of energy required to have a crustal shift occur, and I agree. The energy required would be on the order of a moon hitting us or something along those lines. And there's never, ever been any evidence that such amounts of energy were input in to our planet at all. And in fact, there's all the evidence pointing to the energy going the other way. And it's kind of like you can go to any academic on the planet that talks about tectonic plate theory and say, okay, guys, show me a subduction zone. And they'll say, well, there's a subduction zone off of the Strait of Juan de Fuca where the Pacific plate goes under the U.S. plate. And you say, okay, how will it look different than any other part of the planet where we're going to have, say, the volcanoes and the expansion and so on? And they cannot describe to you any single thing you can go down and look at and find that would allow you to think that the area you were seeing was a subduction zone. You don't see any subduction of one plate under another. You don't see any lines in the sediment that indicate that. You don't see any heat lines. You don't see any melting points. You don't see a continuous long ribbon of grinding material against each other showing up in any form or another. There's no heat signature to that effect or any of that. In fact, when you go to the rupture off the point of San Juan de Fuca plate here off the coast of North America, you discover, hey, why, it's an expansion zone. It's just chock full of volcanoes and all kinds of stuff popping up all the time as it expands, not as it contracts and gets ground underneath each other. So there is no such thing as a subduction zone. It's a theory that was plotted to support the other theory, which was that the tectonic plates go walk about on a relatively stable sphere whose diameter and circumference don't change. Again, that's not happening. So, we'll see on December 21, and I'll be doing an interview on that day with Dan and some of the other guys, and we'll just see how it happens, but I don't think that'll actually be the case. But Drunvalo is wrong in the interpretation of the evidence, not in his approach. Okay, so now a couple of other things here. I've gotten some criticism for the world government of world citizens because a lot of the people that are on some of the commissions and some of the other individuals that have the passports and stuff are part of the problem. You know, the Obama and Agenda 21 guys from the UN. Plus, there's all kinds of words referencing the UN all over the world government of world citizens site. And I would beg to point out a couple of things. If you go and read Gary Davis's book, you see why that is the case. He uses the UN to throw their words right back at them. UN made these proclamations. Well, hey, we can use their tools, their weapons, right back at them. A weapon turns both ways. And also, that's the point of giving these passports to all of the heads of state and all of the creepy guys at the top end of things. Because it adds to the legitimacy of these each and every time that they're used any other spot. And here's the whole point of this. It is impossible, in my understanding of things, for a small group to hijack the world government of world citizens because of two things, or three things, really. Can't exclude anybody Everybody is de facto and de jure, if not declared, citizen of the planet. The documents once issued can't be withdrawn. And the third component is that there's just too many of us, and we are too fractious. So the idea that this is an organization in the sense of, you know, like a political party or something is erroneous. And in my mind, it'll never, ever get there. And if we got to a global parliament, that would be great, because in its nature, you would almost have to have that global parliament be global. And that is to say, every single person in the parlement, the space of speaking, would have a voice. Therefore, by its nature, you would not have representational government. The world government of world citizen, by its nature, cannot be allowed to become representational. It must be ubiquitous. And probably the internet is the basic vehicle that would allow this to occur. But because of the ubiquitous nature of this, everybody being their own representative, or having the ability to just point to somebody who is articulate and so on, and you want to speak for you at that moment, saying, you be my speaker, then that allows us to get around the situation that has occurred in the United States, where factions have arisen and driven out everybody else by setting up barriers to entry and representational government and pyramidal structures and so on. By its very nature, the world government of world citizens is not pyramidal. It is a neural net in that fashion. And we just are around the whole planet. That's the symbol here, a man reaching, or a being, human being, reaching around the whole of the earth, because that's the case. It's all of us joining hands. And then the last component of this, why it'll never ever end up being representational government and a pain in the ass, is because the admonition that you take when you come on into this, to live in the present. And that is an extremely powerful thing when placed into the hands of debaters. So yes, I agree. There's a bunch of individuals that could be characterized as UN stooges or Agenda 21 stooges or primps or promulgators who have shown up on the commissions and so on at the world government of world citizen. But you'll also know they ain't done shit with it. And that's because the type of organization that it is, they're not able to take it over. All they've done is to get themselves a certain level of prominence within that particular commission page, and note when it was last updated at all, and you'll see that this is not a particularly effective organization. That is to say, the world government of world citizens. Nor should it ever be. We don't want a real government that way. We want a flattened neural net. And so the effectiveness should be limited to getting the individual citizens and the countries out of the way. Get the individual citizens out of problems and get the countries out of the way of the bigger issues, allowing the individual citizens to get in there and take them over. And I'll be discussing the methods that the world government of world citizens offers to us in some debates with some really interesting radio guys over these next few weeks. And I actually think it'll be quite exciting to get in there and present this viewpoint and defend it against perfectly valid other viewpoints, such as the de jure citizen movement. And many of the tactics are the same, and most of the goals are the same. I just think that this is a brilliant opportunity to basically subsume the UN and the New World Order from within and take them over. So we can get into some of those details as we go forward. But believe me, anything I would ever join, I don't join organizations. I belong to my dojo and that's it. So any organization I join, I will bend to my will or not be a part of it. And my will would have the world government of world citizens be absolutely flat, non-pyramidical. Nobody's a boss of me. That's one of the precepts of this thing, is that you are not beholden to anyone. You have the right you have the right to express yourself as you choose, and that means leaving your country and coming back into it, the place of your birth, anytime you choose, regardless of the fucktards that have declared themselves the rulers of that particular chunk of land. I mean, that's bogus. You know, you got all these 41 million, I think, displaced Palestinians that were kicked out because the Brits decided that they owned that area of turf, and they were going to give it to some people to cause problems and be a thorn for other individuals later on, and they used as a basis the, quote, historical BS of the Bible to invalidate the rights of the individuals living on that land. And they kicked out 41 million Palestinians and killed who knows how many more over the fiction. And they were also, by the way, you note, not living in the present. In the present, there ain't no God here saying that the Jews own that area of land, right? And in the present, there's no one saying that Korea's got to be split in half in terms of some external force. These are all fictions and abstractions that are placed on the mindset and allow the politicians and these other fellows to twist the situation around. By living in the present, if you were in a debate with any individual, you can always bring them back to the circumstances that exist now. Someone comes on up and tells me that, hey, God says the Jews own this land. And I say, okay, in the present and reality in which I live, there ain't no God. I ain't never seen no God. I never had God come on down and kick my ass. If you've got this alien being, and you ask these people, well, where is your God? And they say, well, he's all over. And I say, well, is he on Mars? Oh, sure, he's on Mars. Oh, okay, so he's off world. Well, no, he's here too. And I say, well, I don't see him here, so he's obviously absent now, and he's spending all of his time on Mars. And by the way, why the hell does God have balls anyway? What's God going to mate with? Who's he going to fuck? So, you know, tell me that this space alien owns any part of the Mideast and has the right to give it away, and show me the documentation that proves that. Show me proof of this. The self-referential book that you wrote, I can write my own book that's self-referential that negates everything that you guys have said. And basically, that's what the world government of world citizens is. It is all of us writing our own books that negate the bullshit of the New World Order and saying that my documentation and my book is as valid as your book. Prove otherwise. And they haven't been able to. And that every time they are faced with this, they cave. Now, they've tried to subsume the organization. This is clear. They've failed. The organization is as a self-organizing collective is continuing and growing and will alter and flow. And as more and more humans join in, it will become more and more different. And more and more expensive, and they will not be able to control this. And again, every time they run into, by they, I mean the powers that be within the western part of the planet, and actually any other part, look at how many governments have been confronted with this, and they've caved. Many times after putting Gary in jail, he was one of the first ones to do this. And this was actually my series of conclusions. I came to the absolute same conclusion that Gary did, that by creating my own series of documents and insisting that they were as valid as anybody else's document and arguing that there is no authority on this planet that makes any document any more valid than any other document, and that if they can prove that there is an authority, then let them do so, and I'm willing to stand up and take the consequences of that, I got to that same set of conclusions. And then I go out and research, and lo and behold, he'd already done that for me, which makes it all ever so much easier, because I have officialdom in the sense of documentation that looks cool that I don't actually have to fabricate. And my sense of graphics is terrible anyway, so I'm sure that there's it's a lot better. Basically, we'll be doing a lot of debating over that kind of stuff over the next few weeks in various different radio shows. I don't think anything's going to be happening on the 21st of December. I actually think we've got until sometime in, according to our data, the global coastal event and the loss of the data sets, the dropping out, the holes, the silence, really picks up sometime late February and ramps up in March and then is pretty settled by May. So we could say that, well, the solar events or expulsions or whatever the hell we're going to get into will occur likely in that period. This would coincide with the farsight.org stuff as well. So I think that's it, really. Just wanted to address those two particular things there. There's just one other element here, and that was the level of, I don't want to say comprehension, but the level of political savvy, if you will, personal political savvy required to use the world citizen or world government of world citizens documentation for your own benefit. against the powers that be is decreasing daily as more and more of us pile on this. So this truly is one of those things where the masses will make a difference. At some point there is going to be it'll have a PC-like effect or a phone effect where there will be the early adopters. We've already had all of those. Now we're going to get into the visionaries first. We had the visionaries, Gary, and then his first followers there that adopted the idea of world government and his passports at all and their passports at all. And then we've had the move from the visionaries into the early adopters, and we'll cross the chasm here. So the technology that is represented, the political technology, and I use the word political advisedly, that is represented by the world government of world citizens, will cross the chasm, and we will have a large enough collective that the status will change virtually overnight. And everybody will want to have their world government and ID just because they'll see that that's the thing. You know, and it's not the lemming effect or any of that, but at some point you have to spread the benefit picture wide enough for people to get excited about it. The more people that get excited about it, the further that benefit picture spreads. And we get that crossing of the chasm there, the chasm, when the benefit picture has spread out far enough that people are reacting to it because they've heard it two and three times. So in many cases, you can look at the spread of Moore's laws and the spread of computing and technology through society in a slightly different way. I always like altering the perspective. In other words, you know, open up your perspective to see that magnetic fields should never be stable, and it opens a different way of thinking. In this case, look at the spread of technology, not as the technology itself or even the idea, but rather as the ripple going through the society of the number of times that people hear about something with a good benefit picture. So you'll find that the visionaries, for instance, they've got a real sharp mind and they jump on these things real early because they can see the benefit picture even ahead of the item appearing. In other words, there's a lot of people that wrote science fiction ahead of the items that they were describing appearing in reality. And that would be one of the, it'd be an instance of these individuals. And so then you would have the other kinds of visionaries who read their stories and were prepared for that technology to arrive, instantly knew the benefit picture and adopted the technology because they'd been prepared ahead of its appearance in reality. Then you'll find that there's other individuals that have to hear about the benefits and have a certain level of inertia overcome. And they might have to hear about the benefits two or three times, and then they adopt it, and so on. And so you see a ladder diagram or neural networks spread pattern appear as the number of times that people hear about the benefit pattern of a particular meme or technology before their inertia is overcome and they adopt. So look at how long it took some people to adopt computers, and then look at how some people got into it right away. Same thing with telephones or any technology, gaming, you know, any of the music technologies, anything you can care to name. Now, what's interesting in our fractured world, where there's people that are video focused, other people that are audio focused, etc., is that you will get these neural network patterns that will cross these individual and collective areas of mental interest. So you'll find that some patterns will suddenly leap from the video world into the audio world, take that by storm, and go on to the kinetic world. You know, so you may see a meme appear in a video that goes through audio and into yoga, or vice versa. I mean, it just, they appear and float around various different from various different perspectives, influencing each other. And so I suspect that that's what's occurring right at the moment. The reason that I suspect that this is occurring is because we have solid evidence of it, some of which I've put up on my site. If you go down into the middle column and look down far enough, you'll see this thing about this guy who discusses why the future is valuable. And that's a very incredible meme, seeing where it's coming from and where it's going through. And of course, we see a lot of the development, the fringe stuff, come out of music and the creative artists, who are, by the way, being hugely influenced by the Solilunius in a way that the sheeple is now reacting to more sluggishly and dully the artist had been reacting to years ago. And so here we see the artists now, some of the groups I've put on my site intermittently, that are exhibiting the language of revolution and everything that I'd been discussing a number of years back. It's now appearing in the mainstream, which is basically the internet. And we're seeing it in music and in gaming and all these themes appear. And so the spread of the particular language and in its benefit picture follows particular neural network patterns, also known as ladder diagrams, which really mimics like the spread of disease through a population. And frequently the example cited is the spread of a disease through an orchard, how some trees remain untouched until very late in the process and others succumb very early. And if we look at it a different way, that's also the same mechanism whereby the spread of information goes through society and alters and changes things. And so we see these patterns exist over and over and over again in all of universes, just these basically the same pattern, the same fractal pattern, interlaid on itself, made more complex, and shifted to a different area of focus. This is why I am able to say with some certitude that we've never seen a liquefaction of the mantle of the planet. By that I mean, as far as I'm able to determine, it's never occurred, and that we've never ever seen a situation where there's been no magnetics. They've been very low, but there's never been a situation of none. And even if we had none, it wouldn't cause the effect that's being postulated because of the energy issues involved. Because the universe doesn't work that way. It doesn't work in Big Bang, it works in little bloops. Ergo, we have the following situation where we're going to get a lot of little bloops, the planet's going to grow, there's going to be some ruptures, the result of the growth will cause us some disturbances up here, but it won't shift me to the position from the Pacific Northwest down to the equator. It just doesn't work that way. Never has. We're interpreting evidence to that effect, and our interpretations are valid and our conclusions are valid based on that evidence, absent certain examination of the assumptions. And the assumptions are invalid. The assumptions that they make are that the magnetic stability of the planet is long-lasting, that it's not perpetual, very long-lasting, and further that we're in a period of instability, which is rare. And I don't think that is true. And also, the universe doesn't support that view. So, in any event, the spread of the world government of world citizens meme, whether it's that organization or not. I mean, we can create another one. We could call it, old dogs government for old dogs and start all over again. Doesn't matter. And see, that's the beauty of it, too. World government of world citizens. If an organization arose that was pyramidical in structure and it pissed everybody off, well, everybody is certainly free, as the UN and all of the everybody states, we have the freedom to put our political allegiance where we want. We can just tell the world government of world citizens to piss off. We're going to form another one that's different, that's better, and so we have this revolutionary capability within it continuously. And I think that is great because it is the struggle that keeps the purity going. In any event, though, it's worth the experiment. And between now and the collapse of the global coastal event, which is not the end of the world, but it's the beginning of a significant series of changes that'll slap the sheeple upside the head and cause a major mental shift to occur across the planet. But until then, I figure the world government of world citizens is just the proper vehicle to go on out and cause problems for the powers that be. And yes, there is that one last nagging bit of stuff. If I were to act in a capacity and join the, sovereign order of world guards and going out and arrest some of the nasty bastard banksters, just what the hell would we do with them? We don't have any process nor place to put them. Actually, I've thought about that. You wouldn't really have to do anything. You would, it would be not necessary on this planet to incarcerate them. Would not be necessary to impede on their freedom in any way, shape, or form. An arrest for the world, government has a different nature anyway. Because there's no place on the planet for them to flee, in a global society based on, the world government of world citizens. They would actually have to exit the planet to be able to extricate themselves from the authority of the planetary government. Therefore, you don't have to throw them in jail. All you would have to do is to serve papers on them. In essence, a summons to appear to defend yourself, and absent that, be prepared to accept the consequences of failure to show up and defend yourself, or showing up and failing to defend yourself adequately against the charges. And that might mean incarceration. It might mean the confiscation of your wealth, this kind of thing. And see, there's the rub. Even if they don't show up and don't submit to incarceration and all that, the world government, world citizens, all of us, we would have the authority and the power to crush their lives. You know, even if it got to the point where taxi cabs wouldn't stop for them, you know, the drivers of limos wouldn't open the doors, you know, the doorman wouldn't open the doors, the bankers wouldn't cash the check, the teller wouldn't cash the check, because these people would be branded as having been guilty, and all of us would know about it. And where would they flee to? Yes, there would probably be places on this planet that would set themselves up as havens for the convicted among our population. But that means almost self-incarceration if these people go to those particular areas. And we could, if we wanted, and I think it's necessary that redemption always be possible. And so I would offer that if the world government or world citizens got to the point where it was submitting summons to appear to defend yourself and then issuing the consequences of failure to defend yourself from a world court, and though there were sanctions levied against an individual, I would suggest that those sanctions should never include violence, because it's not necessary anymore. That's an anachronism of the nation state. They have to use force. We don't. And that further, that we should have a path of redemption. Someone who is convicted and is guilty should have a method whereby they can redeem themselves in our eyes. That may be some form of Coventry, you know, self exile with risk of death or something. I don't know. I don't know what the mechanism should be, but it needs to exist, because all humans are redeemable. Even the worst among us. So we need that. And also, like I say, arrest is going to take a different form. And if you had a, so for instance, say that the world government of world citizens decided, based on a petition brought by Max Kaiser, I'm just using Max as an example. I don't think that he would even participate in this. But say that he brought forth a petition for the arrest of Jamie Dimon for crimes against humanity using the vehicle of money. And that the appropriate body within the World Council, World Government, decided, okay, Max Kaiser has a really damn good point, and he's presented enough evidence here for us to go through the process of indicting Jamie Dimon. We do so. We produce a document basically saying, we suspect that you're guilty of these crimes. Here's some of the evidence against you. You have the rights, to defend yourself. And we're presenting you with a summons. And if you fail to defend yourself, you'll have to be, censured. Because you will have been found guilty by us as having been a right royal bastard who's been out fucking people and killing and causing problems with money. And this is not to be tolerated. And then at that point, we would all have to decide what those sanctions would have to be and how they would be enforced and so on. But again, violence isn't necessary. There's no need for incarceration in a planetary government. The only incarceration or separation we would need would be for those people that are so violently mentally ill that we are unable to cure their mental states and make them, and assist them in becoming part of the planet. And also, again, anybody who refuses to be to participate in curing their mental illness has a perfect right to that. I enjoy my mental illness, and I would never, ever, ever allow myself to be subjected to the cult or religion of psychiatry to cure that. There's a virtue in being mentally ill, and we need those mentally ill around us. However, we also need, you know, the vehicles that allow people to get out of the situations that we find ourselves in, because life is tough. And we need all of us, we need to redeem all of us. So, I'm just offering that out there, that just thinking about it, a sovereign order of world guards who had gone out, they wouldn't have to do much, really. They're not going to have to be violent. They're not going to have to be cops or policemen. Policemen, by the way, are policy enforcers. Our guys are not even going to have to be law enforcers, because they're not enforcing the common law. They're merely acting as messengers of the will of the world government of world citizens. And in that case, any citizen would have the right to put forth arguments that any other citizen had trespassed or caused a crime, and that this should be addressed. It's going to be hugely chaotic, especially since lawyers wouldn't be allowed. this is a situation where common law prevails. And so no legalistic bullshit, precedent, blah, 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 is going to get you out, because it doesn't get argued that way. It's done in the present moment. Common law exists in the present moment. All the abstractions of the legal system and precedent and so on exist in some other moment, past or future. Ergo, wouldn't be allowed. And therefore, the discovery process, all of this sort of thing, would be relatively quick once it was enjoined. Again, it would be difficult and chaotic, especially at first, as we felt our way forward with all of this. But, you know, as they observe, all things are difficult in the beginning. And we got to start somewhere. So, you know, hey, you know, Max, if you want to put together a petition to arrest Jamie Dimon and present it to the world government of world citizens, and they accepted that petition, I would volunteer to present the summons to him, even though I don't travel. I would present that summons to him in a dignified and adult manner without force, and hopefully act as a good example on how such things could be conducted with the guilty among us. So thanks ever so much for listening. Once again, I've taken up way too much of your damn time. We can put it down to the fact that I'm just basically sitting around not doing much and trying to be as quiet as I can while Kathy is in recovery mode here. So all you poor bastards are likely to get a lot more of this. Anyway, check it out, guys. World Government of World Citizens. Make it your own. Nobody else owns it. Bye.